Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme, Seascapes. Shortly, we'll be hearing about a remarkable gathering earlier this week in the National Maritime Museum of Ireland. We'll be talking to Pather Ward, President of the Maritime Institute of Ireland, and to Richard McCormack about a significant meeting of those on this island involved in maritime heritage or associated with activities in that field. A listener has some thoughts on the convention for naming naval vessels following the recent sale of the Eleemer. First, though, to the area of marine technology. Next week in Belfast at the Titanic Centre, a major gathering of speakers from around the globe will assemble at the Smart Ocean Forum. They'll be focused towards building a marine technology sector on this island. Owen Sweeney of Energy and Marine, whom I first met on Seascapes at the Ocean Innovation Conference a decade ago in St. John's in Newfoundland, explained what's planned.
We being the Marine Institute and the wider marine development community in Ireland, have been looking for real opportunities for where Ireland can create new activities, industrial activities, employment-generating activities, that makes sense for us. I mean, we can't compete in terms of shipbuilding and heavy engineering, but there are areas where we can do things. And one of them is in the whole area of monitoring what's happening in the ocean, not just for climate change purposes, but also, for example, marine renewable devices are going to be in the sea. They're going to have sensors that say what's going on in there. They're going to have communication systems that get this information back to points of collection, and they're going to have sort of data requirements and how you analyse and deliver the information to end users about what's going on. So the whole area, we call that marine ICT, information and communications technology. We have strengths in this country, clearly. Everybody knows about our software industry and, you know, our large multinationals and IBM and Google and all of these companies. So this is an opportunity for us to create a whole capability in industry in the application of this kind of technology to activities in the ocean, and that's what we're trying to do.
And it involves the whole island of Ireland, which I think is important to stress, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're delighted that Invest Northern Ireland are hosting this year's Smart Ocean Forum. This is something we started a few years ago. It's relatively informal. It's a way of networking marine users, the marine community, with companies that may never have thought of the marine environment as a place to do business. ICT companies, small engineering companies, companies involved in specialised engineering and sensors and so on. So we're trying to create a kind of an informal network of companies that will feed off each other. And it's great that this is being done on an all-island basis. You know, I think we're small players. If you combine North and South, we're small beer in the scheme of things. And it really makes sense for us to work together and try and build business activities in this North and South. The engagement of the Marine Institute in the Atlantic strategy that the Commission developed earlier this year has been very significant. I mean, Ireland was very influential in brokering a real dialogue between the US, Canada and Europe about how to understand what's happening in the Atlantic, which we absolutely have to do from a whole variety of points of view. And that's going to require the deployment of whole suites of kind of observing technology and sensor systems, because we really need to understand this. I mean, whatever about your views on climate change and when it might happen and what the impacts will be, there are processes taking place. We know that the oceans are becoming more acid. We know about threats to fish stocks and habitats and so on as a result of changing temperatures and all of this. And we really need to understand this in much greater detail. And there's real business in this, because if we can predict with greater accuracy where specific storm events are going to take place. This is of huge value to the insurance community. So this isn't just sort of science that's nice to do. I mean, this is business as well, and that's what we're trying to do in the whole ICT area.
Also, I suppose it's about not alone harnessing the sea, but protecting the sea as well. And that's very much written into the core of what's been done here.
It is, yeah. I mean, we have to protect, but I mean, the first thing we have to do is actually to understand. I mean, and the reality is that the sea, being so vast and so complex, is immense, is hugely difficult to understand, because events happen. You know, typically we measure it, we drop a sensor pod and we sense what's happening. But that's just one point in this huge, complex, dynamic, changing environment. And to try to understand what's happening across that is a huge challenge for science and for technology. And the technology is where, again, where the business is.
So what about speakers at the Smart Ocean Forum? Obviously, the opening address will be, I presume, by Dr. Peter Heffernan of the Marine Institute, probably Arlene Foster from representing the North of Ireland. This is an area, as you say, you're bringing a whole lot of different minds together and hoping they bring something forth from this.
This is a business forum. I mean, what we're trying to do is to bring together sort of emerging science and technology requirements with the capability to actually deliver this. And that involves people who manufacture equipment and sensors and communication systems and so on. So we've got speakers from a whole variety of tech companies. We have speakers from the US and Canada, because this is an Atlantic challenge as well. And coming back to the role of the Marine Institute, I mean, one of the challenges is that the Marine Institute is largely a science agency. We're not an industry agency, though it's perhaps we should be. There is a gap there at the moment. Enterprise Ireland generally serve client companies. We don't have a lot of sort of marine client companies in Ireland. Therefore, they don't see a sort of a hugely active role for themselves in this space at the moment. And one of the things we really have to do is to create a capability that we're able to proactively go out and harness industry behind this objective of creating capability in this country. In parallel with this process, we're doing a consultation exercise with companies in a variety of sectors: oil and gas, fishing, aquaculture, marine environmental consultancy companies, and so on, basically to get them to sort of think ahead and say, where do they see breakthroughs coming over the next 5-10 years that will change the way they do business. So what we're trying to do is to focus in on where industry sees the potential breakthrough opportunities. And these will inform the research agenda that we then try to get our funding agencies, Science Foundation Ireland, the Marine Institute itself, Enterprise Ireland and so on, to come in a coordinated sort of group to build our capabilities there.
Well, I'm just thinking on that we met a decade ago in Newfoundland when a lot of this was being discussed, and it's really come a huge distance, hasn't it, in 10 years?
It has, yeah. I mean, this is a process. There's no real end point. I mean, I think we have been successful in creating industry capability in this country. We've got a long way to go. We still have very few resources in terms of people pushing this agenda. You know, the Institute is heavily tasked on environmental and fish monitoring and research and so on, and doesn't have a kind of a group of people to be able to get in behind this. And that's something that is a challenge now for the Ocean Wealth process, which is underway and has been sort of launched by the government, where the objective is to increase, to double Ireland's the contribution the marine economy makes to our national economy. So the challenge here is to sort of get coordinated resourcing behind these potential growth areas.
Owen Sweeney talking to Seascapes about that Smart Ocean Forum, and you can find out more on the Seascapes webpage. Congratulations to SB20 sailor Ben Duncan and his crew Joe Turner and Davy Taylor, who were crowned the 66th ISA All-Ireland Champions on Saturday last in Howth Yacht Club. In fact, Howth will host the inaugural Moth Irish Open this weekend. Our thanks to Seamus McAllult, whom we met this week in Dún Laoghaire. He told us about a public lecture by Gary McMahon on the Ketch Island, Ireland's sole surviving sail trader. That's on Thursday next, the 7th of November, at 20:00 hours in the Poolbeg Yacht and Boat Club in Ringsend. Entry is €5 in aid of the RNLI, and you can get further details on 087-212-9614. That number, 087-212-9614. Next on Seascapes to the Maritime Heritage Gathering, which was held in the beautifully restored National Maritime Museum of Ireland on Hay Terrace in Dún Laoghaire on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, with a number of guest speakers and focused workshops and presentations. A word first from the President of the Maritime Institute of Ireland, Pather Ward.
Well, we're absolutely delighted that we're in a position to host it here today and to bring such a wide variety of people here, all with an interest in maritime matters and in maritime heritage and so on, and to have them here, I suppose, to exchange views, and we're all going to learn a lot from this here today. What's interesting, in fact, is that people, we know lots of names, but actually putting faces on those names is something that, if you like, is almost new to us, because people who have a great reputation in what they're doing in their own areas, but in fact, we haven't been able to come together to exchange views. So that's really what's going to happen, and we'll be able to tap everybody's knowledge. And at the end of this, I'm quite sure that we're going to get a wide variety of views that we can solidify into what are the most important things that we should be focusing on for maritime heritage. As it is, in fact, we can't display a lot of what we have. And in fact, it's one of the handicaps that we have here in the museum, that although we're not that long open, just over a year, and that we have the gallery now open, we could put the same amount again on display if only we had the space to do it. We were only open a number of weeks when the development of the Library and Cultural Centre commenced beside us here. And while we're looking forward to its completion and that it will help the area here, at the same time, it has been a huge handicap. And in fact, it has made it particularly difficult for visitors to access the museum, in particular from the seafront. And so we've lost out, I suspect, significantly on visitor numbers as a result of that. But having said that, we feel that it will enhance the general area, and in that context will be a big bonus for the museum when it's finished and when it's open next year. We're delighted that, in fact, the local authority and the Cathaoirleach, Carrie Smith, is going to host a reception for the guests who are from right around the country and indeed from outside Ireland who are here today. And also the fact that the Minister, Minister Deenahan, will be with us this afternoon for dinner in the National Yacht Club.
Over the coming weeks, we'll be hearing from some of those who attended the Maritime Heritage Gathering. Seascape spoke to Richard McCormack, who explained how the event took shape.
Well, it started off with a very simple concept. I was filling in a grant aid form to the Department of Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. And I just felt, as I was going through the process, that there was a need for people to come together, people of like mind and even different mind, to come together and talk about the issues to do with the maritime heritage. And maritime heritage is a very broad church. It doesn't just begin and end with what's between the covers of a book, because that can be slightly dry. We have a broad range of people here. We have maritime historians. We have authors who've written books on the maritime, some very distinguished authors. We have people who are working in community groups, teaching young people the skills of sailing, the skills of boat building, the simple things like rope work, which bit by bit by bit gets the young people interested in things maritime. And also we have people who are genealogists who probably are coming into their own more in the maritime sphere now than ever before. Because there is a demand or even a genuine interest amongst people to get to know what happened to their ancestors who went to sea, that they have little detail about. All they knew, they were a cook or a captain. They knew nothing about them. But bit by bit by bit, those doors have been opened up to those of us who are interested in genealogy. So there's a very broad church here of people. And I was very pleased to get so many people. We have from Northern Ireland, from England, from all around the coast of Ireland who've come here. There are at least 100 people at this event, and it represents 60 organizations. And I think what is more encouraging to me as we were putting this together was that some organizations who could not come to this turned around and said, could we give a presentation to you? Because one of the things that people were asked to do was a 4-slide presentation of their group, because we wouldn't have time to ask 60 people to talk at anyone in this event. So a number of people, 6 or 8 people from the UK and elsewhere, sent up their presentations to show solidarity and support for what we're trying to do here. And it is an interesting way of going about things. There's a social aspect, which is very important. As much will be discussed and ideas will be generated in the working groups, but they will also be discussed up in the cafe, drinking endless cups of coffee and tea. So that's the purpose behind it all. And what I hope to see at the end of it all is some solid, sensible recommendations that can be implemented. It doesn't have to be a large number of them. And they also can't rely on government funding for everything, because that's not realistic today. But we do want the support of government agencies. But there's an awful lot that the museums and people working in other areas can do themselves to pull ideas. So, for example, say next year we have the Battle of Clontarf. Instead of 3 groups trying to do something in the Battle of Clontarf, could the 3 groups not go together and organise a roadshow? And that would be the way to go about it. And that heightens the profile, because it is very important that maritime heritage raises its profile. It is probably a bit of a Cinderella in some ways. We have museums like ours, which are wonderful. Wonderful local museums, wonderful national museums, yet people don't really know so much about it. And it is now time that we do something about it. We got off to a very good start, which is normal. We had been closed for 7 years. And of course, when you're closed for 7 years, impetus is lost. And there are members here through that period, and I won't call it a dark period, but a difficult period, who worked extremely hard to keep things going. We had lectures in the Stella Maris. They're still going on to this day, and they're important. But we are now open, and bit by bit, we will improve the numbers coming through here. There is a new building going up alongside us, which is the new library. And on the positive side, it is going to be a draw for people. Because when I retired, I worked for 9 months in Talla Library, an extremely interesting job doing digital imaging, which, of course, I will be doing in this museum with some of our archival material. And we in Talla were getting 1,500 people a day passing through that one library. And a slack day would be about 800. So they're saying that they will have 1,500 people a day going through this new library next door to us, and they will be passing by our doors. And bit by bit, we will entice them in. But one of the points I raised at the opening speech was we need to get the young people interested in it. And it can be simple things. We have a pirate's face up there, which youngsters can poke their head through and get photographed. Probably the most popular thing with young people. They love it. And we had 53 Spanish students in here on Sunday. I believe the din was incredible. It was nothing like anybody had heard before, but they had a great time. And that's what we need. Young people, as well as the middle age, as well as those of mature years. And we will cater for them all. And when we get our library and our archive reinstated again, we will certainly have something new to offer. When the building was closed, we took out the books from here. We brought them down to my former employers, Bord Iscariota, who very kindly stored them for a few years. And we're extremely grateful for that, because they are in excellent condition. I think, and I only think because we haven't actually counted the number of books, we have at least 4,000, probably 5,000 maritime books. But probably even more interesting than the books would be the archival material. We have a huge amount of photographs. We have some very specialist out of print historic hydrographic bathymetric World War II U-boat charts, which are very rare, I can assure you. Innumerable photographs, rare maritime postcards, manuscripts, unpublished research, ships' plans, paintings, and all sorts of ephemera which has been donated to this institute since its inception in 1941. And if I can go back just to the library, and you know, what do we have? We have 430 volume collection of Lloyd's registers of British and foreign shipping, which is a goldmine for historians and a goldmine for genealogists as well. Lloyd's register shipping contain the specifications, the names of the captains and the ownership of every ship that was registered with Lloyd's, many of which were Irish owned, because remember, they go back, Irish goes back to 1842. They actually go back to longer than that in the 1700s, but we have a very good collection from 1842. We also hold very significant collections of 18th and 19th century naval chronicles, and these would be from the golden age of the Royal Navy under sail. And some of them would even pass, some of our material would even deal with the time of Nelson. We actually have the Times announcement of the death of Lord Nelson. We have the original copy of the Times, which has not been seen perhaps here for a very long time. We would have mercantile navy lists, and in that those mercantile navy lists, we would have the very first certificates of competency, which were issued in the 1800s, which includes some of my relatives as well from Derry, Inishowen. These were emigrant ship captains, Captains McLaughlin as they were known, from Shrove, which is only a small little town or village outside of Greencastle, which is obviously represented here today by the Inishowen Maritime Museum. And we have Lloyd's registers of yachts as well. And we have a lot of early edition periodicals, such as Sea Breezes, Yachting Monthly, the Ornell Isles Lifeboat Magazine. Many of these predate both World Wars. So we have a wonderful collection. They're not available to the public yet, but when we get our library properly organised, and by the way, I'm getting the help of some UCD students. We had a wonderful bunch of six University College master students in here last year from the Library and Information Studies Department. And they did a project to try to put discipline on us as to how we organise our collection. Now, I asked for certain things too, and they managed to accommodate it, and I'm very pleased to say that they got first-class honours for the project here. And I was asked only recently, would I take a second group of young students? And of course, yes, we will. But these young students will be dealing with the archival collection, and that is the most amazing stuff, because, as I say, manuscripts, postcards, photographs, stuff that has never seen the light of day, but we want to get a digitisation project going. I have some experience of it, but We will get it done. It will take some years, but it is the way forward. And in a way, it creates a virtual museum as much as we have a physical museum here, because the artifacts here are wonderful. But people can learn context out of books and out of archival material. And that's really what it's all about.
Richard McCormack, one of the driving forces in organising the Maritime Heritage Gathering. Our thanks also to Birgit Faye Roth, Brian Ellis, Dara Trainer, and the members of the Maritime Institute, the community employment workers, and the volunteers. Seascapes met up with many friends from right around our coastline and the inland waterways. We talked also to Maritime Institute member and member of the Coast Guard, Joe Ryan, about the Asgard II.
When the tall ship sailed on the 10th of July 2005, they sailed into the doldrums, which is unusual off Waterford. But one of our helicopter crew, John Manning, took a lovely photograph. And last year, I got a painter in Wicklow, a guy called Pat Dover, to paint from the picture of 2005. Now, we've taken it a stage further. We've produced prints. And these prints will sell at €35, the idea being that €10 of that will go to the new tall ship fund, Spirit of Ireland fund, and another €10 will go to the Maritime Institute, which I have the original painting, I love it, but I'd like to share it with people, and out of that then will also benefit two maritime charities. So I work for the Coast Guard, and we're lucky we're so well equipped with lifeboats, with Coast Guard units, and with helicopters. And, you know, in the Celtic Tiger, people got involved more in leisure, and that hasn't abated. I mean, last summer was our busiest in many, many years because of the fine weather. And, you know, it's today here, it's great to see the maritime tradition being looked into, as well as the museum. The museum is magnificent, but it wouldn't be there if we hadn't got the Maritime Institute to start it in the first place.
So where did your interest in the marine come from? I mean, what was your first time out in a boat?
Well... It wasn't a boat, it was a ship. I spent 12 years as a radio officer, and worldwide.
In special times when to be a radio officer, wasn't it?
It was. I was lucky. I sailed with British India, which was the Pukka side of P&O way back then. But it gave me a great interest seeing the world. And then I came ashore. I worked in computers for 15 years and I got the opportunity to go into the Coast Guard. So I came full circle, but I was also attracted to the Maritime Institute the year I came ashore, nearly 20 years ago. And I hope I'm building work for them as well. You know, it is a great interest. If you're interested in the print of the Asgard, if you can log on to a site called www.lugnad.ie, I'll spell that Lima Uniform Golf November Alpha Delta, or LUGNAD. And if you just go into the news tab on there, it will give you many, many great stories, but it'll also tell you how to order a print of the Asgard.
That website that Joe Ryan mentioned will feature on Seascapes next Friday night, when we'll be speaking with Edward Burke about Lugnad.ie, and we'll have copies of his book, Bound for Australia, The Loss of the Emigrant Ship Taylor at Lamb Bay on the coast of Ireland. We wish all the very best to Damien Foxall and Sidney Gavinier aboard Oman Air Musandam, which we saw briefly in action during the summer. They take to the water from Le Havre in the Mod 70 in the Transat Jacques Vabre, which begins this weekend. This 11th edition brings together four classes: the multi-hulls in the Multi 50 class, the MOD 70s, the monohulls in the IMOCA Open 60s, and the Class 40s. A fun race series earlier this week set the tone before the huge send-off when the race to Brazil starts on Sunday. Next week here on Seascapes, we'll be revisiting the Maritime Heritage Gathering. We'll have details of the topics discussed, and we'll be hearing from Colin Becker of Inland Waterways, David Snook, maritime historian, Edward Burke on Lugnad.ie. We'll have details of the Marinet Initiative, and Seamus Beauvaird from the Inishowen Maritime Museum. All that and much more here on Your Maritime Programme. Until next Friday night, tight lines, fair sailing.